Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, this month, the Sundial Book Club has been reading Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls by T. Kira Madden. The debut memoir chronicles Madden's childhood in Boca Raton. T. Kira shares her experiences as a queer and biracial woman. She opens up, as she calls it, a Russian doll of memories from traumatic experiences like sexual assault, substance abuse, and grief. But also in the midst of that, beautiful recollections of womanhood, friendship, and fun times at middle school dances. The book is structured as fragments or flashes of her memory chronologically, and it ends with some shocking revelations that T. Kira found out while writing the memoir. We talked to her while she was on book tour last week. You can join our book club, by the way, on Facebook. Just look up Sundial Book Club.
I was traditionally a fiction writer. I studied fiction in school, got a graduate degree in fiction, and taught and wrote fiction always. And I never had any interest in nonfiction until my father passed away. And I ended up going to an artist residency. And instead of working on my novel, I found that I really couldn't find my focus in my fiction, that suddenly all these questions about my father and my life kind of started sneaking into the story. But I never intended to kind of make a catalog of traumas. I just kind of began where those questions began, which was in death. The first piece I wrote of the book was about his death, which was tied into the mannequin. So the first memories I had of him and the last memories I had of him, and how kind of the body of the mannequin echoed back to his body as it kind of left him in the hospital. Once I opened one memory, I kind of began opening other memories. I keep using the term Russian dolled, but I think the book really Russian dolled on me. Once I opened one, there was another box and another and another.
People write memoirs at different stages of life, but I think a lot of times we tend to think of like, well, I'm going to wait till I've lived some life before I think about it. But why did you want to, you know, when you finally started putting all these pieces together and that Russian doll, as you say, started to open up for you, why did you decide, you know what, now is the time to do it?
There was always a condescension of, you know, what do you know? You haven't lived your life yet. Go out and live your life before you write any nonfiction. And I think that kind of scared me off of nonfiction and memoir until I wrote this book. But I think that's a really false idea. I think that can be a gendered idea, it can be an ageist idea. And I think the more I've read memoir and nonfiction, the more I realize it's so not about the sprawl of life, or at least it doesn't have to be, as much as it has to be about an experience which is sometimes a single experience that's rendered beautifully and vastly. The idea that it has to be about an entire lifetime to be worthy of one's time is a false one.
The title, Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls. My understanding is that that wasn't your idea, right?
It wasn't, no.
So what happened? How did this come about?
I loved the title, The Rat's Mouth, for Boca Raton, as I'm sure your listeners will know. I liked the kind of punchy irony of it. I liked the translation. And I just thought it was really neat that the translation for this city that is so beautiful and so wealthy and has such a kind of polished reputation had this dark underside and this translation of The Rat's Mouth. But my editors felt that title kind of closed down instead of opening into more questions. It felt like a punchline to them. And also, I think they didn't want it to veer so dark, which was really interesting to me because I think through writing it in different stages, I had different ideas of what the tone was. And of course, in the beginning of writing it, after my father passed away, everything was dark, everything was difficult. And that was the book. And through editing and revising and working through it for years, I actually found some levity and some humor, and I hope that comes across in the book as well. I liked in the end their choice to choose something that felt a little more triumphant, and I think it worked. A lot of people have found this book through that title because they feel part of that tribe, whatever that tribe means to them.
It's always fascinating when you read a memoir as to where a person will start their story, because you could start anywhere. You start with the first chapter, Uncle Nuke. And you write about this mannequin that your mother rescued from a JCPenney dumpster and places it in the window in the apartment that the two of you were living in at the time. What is the significance of starting the book with the mannequin?
That was actually the first piece of the book I wrote. And miraculously, it stayed as the opening. And I think there's something really special about that, that, you know, this book came to me through this this memory of the mannequin just after my father died. And that still remained kind of the opening note of the whole thing. I knew I had this question of whatever happened to the mannequin. And I like the idea of different stand-ins we have for fathers, mothers, parents, whatever it may be, that often we have this, an object or another person or these substitutes. And it's also just an explosive way to introduce my parents that my mom is the type of person still who would, you know, rescue a dummy from a dumpster. And she still has mannequin heads she uses to take the HOV lane in New York City.
That is such a Florida thing, by the way.
Yeah, completely.
I wanted to know a little bit about that relationship you had with your father growing up and how it changed. And by the way, your father, too, is brother of well-known shoe designer Steve Madden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that relationship with your father.
I think of my father as this larger-than-life figure, the love of my life. I loved and love my father still so much. And I think that relationship and that presence can be in flux in someone's life. And I think perhaps people or listeners who have addicts in their life can relate to that idea that you can live such a different life with someone while they're actively using versus when they're in recovery. And that was certainly the case with my parents. It's kind of like a lazy one or the other for people to say, like, this is a book about fatherlessness, or this is a book about father love or mother love and mother loss. Like, those things can coexist. And I think that's true for most of us, that we have moments where we feel that absence and moments where we feel that deep love. I think that's true for most relationships in our lives. So I don't think of myself as fatherless as much as I think of the fatherless tribe of people who are always kind of wrestling within that question of what that means, or people in and out, or people off and on, but always the movement towards a deeper understanding of a person.
People who have spent any time here in South Florida know that you mentioned Boca Raton, and like any city community in South Florida, each community has its own personality, and people will think of Boca Raton and they have ideas that pop into their mind. How do you describe growing up in Boca? And as you mention in the book, that is the only Jewish, Hawaiian, and Chinese girl at your school, but how do you describe that childhood in Boca Raton and the school you went to and the community you lived in and the friends you had?
Usually my kind of opening punchline, because I've lived in New York since I've been 17 years old, people say, Boca Raton, I know it. And I say, let me guess, your grandparents live there. And they say, yes, I come home every winter to visit. So I think there is like that kind of direct flight between Long Island and Boca sometimes. So I actually do still feel this kind of deep connection to Boca because of that, because so many people I meet in New York State, Long Island, New York City, have a relationship to Delray, Palm Beach, Boca, and they do have this understanding of it that I think in other parts of the country, maybe they do not. But I describe it as bizarre, polished, luscious, sparkling, dark. I think most of us might describe the place we're from in really conflicting terms. And I think Boca is that, but to extremes. And I think that's what makes it difficult to explain. I did the best I could in this book, but I could write the same book 10 years from now or 10 years ago, and it would probably look different.
I'm speaking with T. Kira Madden, author of the memoir Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls. The book is our April title for the Sundial Book Club. T. Kira grew up in Boca Raton, Florida. Her debut memoir chronicles her childhood, the highs and the lows. And you can join the book club, by the way, on Facebook. Just look up Sundial Book Club. We'd love to have you, and we'd love to hear what you think of the book as you're reading it. You know, as I mentioned, your parents struggled with substance abuse, and or at least for me, the more touching part of this story was that of your mother's battles, and how, you know, that impacted your relationship. But, it, you know, as you were telling these stories or preparing yourself to tell these stories, did you have a strategy on how you wanted to tackle this?
My mother is the exception in that she's the one person I asked for permissions of what I could write about. And I can say, you know, I was very lucky in that she never once told me to take anything out.
I mean, as she's reading it, how did she feel about, what did she tell you about seeing her life through your eyes?
So it was really a very new and interesting process for both of us. I knew up front that she was the person I cared most about. She's obviously alive. She's in recovery. And it meant so much for me to honor her experience in a way that never felt embarrassing, humiliating, coming from a place of malice. But I think she knows me and trusts me and my work enough that I did talk to her before I wrote a single word. And then I gave her essays as I wrote them to go through them. And I think it's certainly bizarre, but I think ultimately the reason she didn't want me taking things out is she said to me in the very beginning, she felt that she doesn't have necessarily the platform or vocabulary or skill set to render her experience as an addict, but she felt that I could. She felt that by me kind of using her experience in a way that she felt I could do justice to that experience, I could kind of offer a beating heart and a pulse behind this kind of caricature of addict parent, which is just like a bad parent who's absent, who's passed out, whatever the caricature may be that we're used to on television or movies. I think she was hopeful that I would be able to show the humanity behind what that looks like.
One of the fascinating aspects of this book is that throughout, you actually take a moment to tell us about where some of these people ended up. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, has anybody else from your past read this book and responded to you?
Mostly with a great deal of support. I'm sure there are people who have read it and who might not be happy with me, but I haven't heard from them yet. You know, I think it's important in some cases that people read the full book and therefore the full context. I think it says something about the fact that I am willing to be very honest about myself on the page. It was important for me not to write myself as, you know, a hero, going through the hero's journey with no flaws and just kind of casting judgment on other people. It was important for me not to cast judgment on people or make conclusions about people, but to just have the experience there for the reader to make their own conclusions or judgments.
You talk about the hero's journey. Fascinating aspect of this journey that you take is during the process of writing it, you discover that you have a sister.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
I'm still trying to find the vocabulary, I think. I did my best in that book, but I'm still processing. I mean, the events of the last third of the book are very new in my life. I was writing them in real time after I had sold my book. And I was writing it as it was happening. It's still one of the more strange and beautiful and miraculous things that's happened to me in my life. In this age of, you know, Ancestry.com and 23andMe, I think these stories are becoming more and more frequent and talked about. And, you know, every time I bring up Ancestry.com and my sister, somebody else knows somebody who found out about their sister, their brother, their dad wasn't their dad, this affair, that affair. So it's kind of a really interesting time right now with these DNA tests, and these secrets are just being blown open. And sometimes I feel kind of bad about that as much as I'm so grateful. This is the greatest gift of my life. Often I'm like, wow, is it really right that we are kind of blasting open these secrets that were buried so long ago in our families?
You are on book tour right now. What are you hearing from readers as you travel around the country? What are they telling you about their experiences reading your book?
I think with memoir and nonfiction, what you get is really personal reactions and people sharing their own stories with me in a way that wouldn't necessarily happen with fiction. I wrote this book to communicate with people, to open up a dialogue about issues that are important to me, and in some cases, issues people don't necessarily feel comfortable sharing or talking about. I wanted to take things like sexual assault, drug addiction, privilege, race, and I wanted to shine a light on those things, because those are things that have been hushed in my own history and family. And I think in most people's cases, those are things that are kind of shrouded in shame or darkness. They don't want to talk about them. At these events and readings and through my inbox, I'm just seeing people say, you know, this happened to me. And they want to talk about it, or they just want to feel that in some cases they don't want to talk about it, but they just want to, you know, shake my hand or give me a hug and say thank you for putting that out there. I feel less alone in this experience now. certainly my experience growing up, I didn't feel I had the literature I wanted. And therefore, I felt like no one else in the world could possibly understand what my life was like, when that's not true. I mean, these things are so common. It's just that people don't write about it or talk about it as much.
As I was reading it, I started thinking to myself, if I were to write a memoir, you know, I'd have to spend some time trying to remember things, you know, accurately. Mm-hmm. And for me, I mean, at that stage of life that I'm in, if I were to look back on my childhood, there are flashes of moments, but it's like, wow, to try to remember details, a lot of details. For you, what was that like? Was that mm-hmm. difficult?
Well, first of all, I like the way you use the term flashes, because I think that is how it feels. Sometimes I get questions about the structure or the fragmentation of my book. And it was very intentional, because memories do come in kind of those flashes or those moments, those really distilled kind of flashes of sensation or dialogue, whatever it is. And I wanted to mimic and mirror that experience in the book. And that's why it is fragmented. I wanted to say something about memory. But I can speak for me personally. I do have almost a supernatural sense of memory. I think growing up, I was often in kind of a flight or fight mode of panic and hyper awareness. And I think that definitely contributes to my memory growing up. I remember things from when I was, you know, 5 years old more than I remember last week in certain cases. And I also kept journals and diaries. I accessed those a lot while I was writing this. So those were the tools, plus a great deal of interviews and conversations that I used to kind of render my life in this way.
T. Kira, it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Such an honor. Thank you so much.
That is T. Kira Madden, author of the memoir Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls. That's the Sundial Book Club title for the month of April. And we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on the book so far. If you've been reading it, you can join our book club on Facebook. Again, just look up Sundial Book Club. We'd love to have you.